The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Guardian World Cup Football Daily and Sunday's action. USA, Portugal. Nani tried to put it to bed early. Clint and company refused to lie down, but just when they looked in dreamland, they had a Varela rude awakening. What an extraordinary match it was. We'll have full coverage from Manaus. Elsewhere, there was Russia, Belgium, a winner from Origi, while the Russians couldn't score in one, and that extraordinary Algeria-South Korea game. Then it's on to Monday's action as we find out who's going through from Groups A and B. Can you afford to miss Guardian World Cup Football Daily? Woof!
Yeah.
Alright. Oh, it's hot here.
Bloody muzzies.
Julien Laurent! Beating your way through the undergrowth.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you, my debut.
Alright, and that was Simon Burnton over there.
Hello.
Blinking the sweat from his eyes.
Yeah, I'm not used to these conditions.
Right.
Yeah, I hope we see a tape here, though.
I hope we do, too. I think they've gone digital, though. Oh, it's a pier. Yeah, right, okay. What an extraordinary... Did we say this before? On pretty much every single day of the World Cup so far? But what an extraordinary day at this Cup of World. It's just been amazing. Algeria is South Korea, 4-2, and all sorts of history being made there. Belgium, Russia, which was less exciting, admittedly. But then it was all capped off with the extraordinary clash between USA and Portugal, which was, spellbinding.
Remarkable stuff. Yeah, and an early and pretty horrific goal for America to concede. But then Postigan, how good he is, well, I guess most of us have made up our minds by now. But anyway, he went off early, and on comes Adair, Red Adair, as perhaps they should call him, the man you turn to in times of crisis to can be relied on to quickly and efficiently snuff out all signs of danger. He didn't have much of a game, Adair, and Portugal really struggled to create anything much up front. America had loads of shots, and suddenly all their dreams seemed to be coming true.
Yeah. All right, that's pretty much the game there. I mean, but there was so much to it. 2-2, the final score. Let's get the reaction, because it was an absolutely crazy game, by the looks of it, in the stadium, from one man who was there, Paolo Bandini.
Hey, James, how are you?
I'm very well. Paolo, how mad was that?
That was absolutely wild. I mean, all set up for the American story, second time around, of basically refusing to accept the result with him one time from behind. And I have to say, I really thought it was fully deserved, the American comeback. Portugal pretty much fell into exactly the same trap that the U.S. did in their first game, which was scoring early and then withdrawing too much. And it really it felt like the USA had earned that victory. And that late goal from Varela is a strange one now, because, you know, technically it keeps Portugal alive in this tournament. But before the game, Paulo Bento was saying, if we don't win this game, then we might as well start packing our bags. Well, Portugal are still 3 points from 3 points behind both Germany and the U.S., with a -4 goal difference. Their chance of getting out of this group are probably not much better than they would have been had they been formally eliminated tonight. So they're still in a hole, but it's certainly made the picture a lot more complicated for the U.S. And probably a happier reception, I imagine, will be what it gets in Germany.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, you spent the day drenched in sweat there in the heart of the Amazon, and that was before the game even kicked off. And once it did, the excitement just ramped up way beyond 11. We saw great pictures of the fan parks back in America and the celebrations there. Well, what was it like in the stadium as the goals flew in?
Oh, it was an amazing atmosphere in the stadium. And you know, I've been spending a lot of time out here. I've got part of my travel out here has been with the American Outlaws, the major American sports group, and they've been unbelievable all the way here. They're bringing I don't know exactly how many it was today, but I'd say there was definitely over 10,000 Americans in that stadium, and they brought a reported 20,000 in itself. They've been so loud, but I have to say, Portugal's support was also phenomenal in this game. I really sort of got there expecting it to be another sea of American flags and American chants, but it really was just both teams had incredible support. It was a ridiculously hot night. I think all of us in the press box were dripping with sweat by the end of the game, so I don't know how the players managed it down there, but it was an unbelievable atmosphere and an unbelievable end to the game. I still don't know what it means for everybody. I think Portugal is still pretty much deep in it, but for the US it's frustrating because they would have qualified with that win.
Absolutely. In the press box, how many journalists had actually stripped off their shirts and were covering the game bare-chested?
I didn't see any, but that might be to do with the fact that we had mocks about the size of my fist landing on them. People were a little bit shy about taking clothes off with all sorts of insects appearing and dropping on top of us. Now, I didn't see any of that, but I can tell you that there are a few that were pretty wet through by the end of the game looking down my bench.
Yeah, I can imagine. Paolo does have normal-sized fists, just in case you're wondering about that moth statistic. Well, it's an exceptional night for America, amidst figures that show that the sport is now even more popular than beer pong in the United States. So really, really special times there for Team USA and Jürgen Klinsmann. Of course, a draw in the final game now, Paolo, between Jürgen and his erstwhile protege, Yogi Love. We'll see both USA and Germany going through. Isn't that a little bit like a situation back in 1982 or something?
Well, I think this is a very familiar situation to Italian football fans. I think if this is Italy involved, we'd be talking about the discosso right now. I don't know if Jürgen might put in a light-hearted phone call to some of his old friends in the German camp. Who knows? But, it's a good situation for Germany now, because for them they only have to draw the game and they know that the US are content with the draw. So really, it's a situation where Germany get what they want, which is to win the group, not just to qualify.
Yeah.
So it is definitely a bad new situation for Ghana and Portugal. But I don't know if we can presume that that's how it's going to play out. We'll just have to wait and see.
All right, where are you heading next, Paolo?
Right now I'm heading into the press conferences, and my next stop will be in Natal for Uruguay, Italy.
Ooh, all right. Well, we're definitely trying to catch up with you there, you harbinger of excitement.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm looking forward to it, but it should be meaningful, if nothing else.
Yeah, another fascinating chapter of this most extraordinary of World Cups. Paolo, enjoy that mix zone. We'll catch up with you soon. Quick thought for Vito, who was previewing us this game the other day from a Portuguese perspective, and he must have thought it was all over, as I suspect we all did. But then the way the game started, he must have thought, well, why were we even worrying? Portugal looked so assured for the first kind of 2 or 3 minutes. That incredible Ronaldo move to begin with.
Yeah, wow. It's one of the best moments of the World Cup. Even in this incredible World Cup, something like that is so special. And obviously it's in the middle of the pitch, so it doesn't actually bring anything. Then Raul Morales missed the pass afterwards, so it didn't even lead to anything good. But it was still like, wow.
It was kind of four highlight clips bolted together in one move. Absolutely dizzying stuff. And then not long after that, Nani scores after Tin Howard sort of sat down to get a better view. I'm not quite sure what. I don't know, did he slip over? What? I don't know.
But I think he just had a bit of a sit down.
He just had a sit down. But then what happened?
Well, Portugal don't have much of a team. That's what happened.
Ah.
And they proceeded to demonstrate that in all sorts of ways. Nani had a kind of... He had an interesting game. He had a good and bad, good nanny, bad nanny match. He was constantly taking off one hat and putting on the other.
He hit the post.
Mm-hmm. Like a couple of splendid shots.
Was that the one just before the incredible Tim Howard, I'm falling one way, but I'm going to thrust a hand out the other way, save? Yeah,
best save of the competition so far.
Really?
Probably.
Possibly. There was
Ochoa, obviously, the other night.
Ochoa put on a bit of a highlight reel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it Iran who had a header yesterday that was tipped over the bar?
Yeah, Romero yesterday, yeah. The thing about Portugal, though, is that if you compare with 2012 and the Euros, where they reached the semi-final and where you could say were a bit unlucky as well to lose in that semi-final against Spain, they actually haven't improved whatsoever, you know, and they actually, it's actually the other way around. They've disimproved, you know, since then. And
got worse, as we say.
Or got worse, yeah, in English. Yeah. In English, but, you know, Paolo, they've had a lot of injuries in the preparation, which is a good point. They had their left-hand side tonight with Almeida, who is usually a right-back, who doesn't even play for Benfica. Who they moved that left-back because Contrao is injured, obviously. And that's where the United States hit them, because they knew that was their weakest link anyway, and it worked. However, you expect so much more from a team from Portugal, you know, and even from Ronaldo as well, apart from the cross at the end. It was just so disappointing. Overall, you know, the first game was obviously a shocker against Germany, but this one was not far from as bad as the first one, really.
It was amazing how little Ronaldo celebrated after that goal. You'd have thought there would have been at least a little bit of punching in the air, but he pretty much wiped that goal from his shoe like a turd. He was disgusted with the position he was in. A glorious cross for that 95th minute equaliser.
He might be in considerable pain. I'm not sure, because he comes in with this chronic tendonitis in his knee. He might not be in much of a state for celebrating. I don't know. Clint Dempsey, of course, playing with a broken nose and not wearing a mask.
He's a real man. He's a real man. That's all.
Well, extraordinary. I'm not quite sure how Portugal actually managed to get back into that game, because it looked like all the way through the second half it was just America, 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 America. But there were maybe a little bit of naivety in not just seeing out those final minutes. But then again, that's been the story of this World Cup. Late shocks and early ones as well. Anyway, that leaves Group G with Germany and USA tied on 4 points, but Germany's goal difference is...
Plus four.
Why can't I see this on this table?
Plus one for America.
Oh, is it three better, is it?
Yeah.
All right. And then Ghana and Portugal on 1 point. So it all comes down to, if Germany and USA draw on the final match day, they go through. Indeed. With Germany in first place, and Ghana and Portugal can go...
Ghana win by two goals, then they would overtake USA, would they not?
Yeah. Not if USA draw.
That's right.
Yeah,
I would check that.
Basically, even if Germany lose, that unless they lose by like three goals and Ghana beat Portugal by two goals, they overtake them. But, you know, even that, Germany are through.
It's looking like victory in this group is a real prize.
Right.
Given the teams that, well, it looks like Algeria might be coming in.
It's interesting you see it that way around, rather than from Group H's perspective. So whoever wins this group is going to face the second place team in Group H, which as it stands is Algeria, who came up with an absolutely storming 4-2 win over South Korea earlier on Sunday. Group H currently reads Belgium on 6 points, Algeria on 3 in second place, and then Russia and Korea Republic on a point apiece, so they're still technically in it as well. But let's have a look at that Algeria-South Korea game. I was a little bit dismissive about this, and how wrong I was, because it was an absolutely blinding match of football. So, I mean, you did the match report, I think.
I did. I mean, Algeria have pretty much become a byword for boredom in recent World Cup history. The goal they scored in their first match had been their first in, what, two whole World Cups? England fans will remember the England-Algeria match in 2010. That was
when an owl settled on the crossbar and stayed there.
Yeah, why not? So then in their first game they did score a goal, but they only had one shot on target in the entire match, three shots in all. So very little encouragement coming into this match, but they just started it like a steam train and kept on going. That first half performance was, I mean, high octane, high energy, really intoxicating stuff, and certainly the Koreans got quite lightheaded.
Yeah. In 12 minutes, Algeria scored more World Cup goals than they had in the previous 28 years. That's a fantastic stat, isn't it? Yeah. And of course, they could now go through for the first time ever, depending on what happens on the final match day of this group. But, you know, you mentioned their dismal performance in the past, and it wasn't that spellbinding against Belgium either in the first game. So was this performance all about the fact that South Korea are rubbish, or do you see this as being the real Algeria breaking through?
They made five changes to their team. So it was significantly changed in more than just attitude. Hopefully, this is what we can look forward to seeing more of. I mean, it was a brilliantly entertaining match.
The Brahimi goal, which is the fourth one?
Yes, brilliant. The 1-2 with Sofyan Feghouli. They've got good players. You know, they've got very good, skillful with a lot of technical abilities players. And I think Vahid Halilhodžić, their coach, PhD legend, obviously, find a much better balance in this game than in the game against Belgium, where their tactical plan was completely different anyway. Against Belgium, they just wanted to sit deep and defend to try to get a draw and maybe snatch a goal on the counter like they did. And they were a bit unlucky, to be fair, to lose. And tonight, they just wanted to sort of dominate the game and dictate the pace of the game, which they did, especially in the first 45 minutes, where they were really, really outstanding. Helped very much so by the very naivety of the South Korean defense, but they've got a good squad.
All right, well, they're the first African team to score 4 goals in a single match.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. And a draw against Russia in their final group game should be enough to see them into the knockout stages, which they've never done before. And of course, their first World Cup, probably the story's all over the place. I mean, it's quite famous. 1982, they beat Germany in the first group game. They were going to get out, but then the Germans and the Austrians fiddled it so that they couldn't get out, and it was seen as a bit of a raw deal for the Algerians back then. But of course, as luck would have it, if they do go through in second place, who will they meet in the knockout stages?
Germany. Yeah. Exactly.
All right.
And what's interesting as well about that Algerian team is in the starting 11 tonight, 8 of them were born in France. Of the 3 who were born in Algeria, one of them grew up in France, Jamel Mesbah, who went to play for Milan and now is. Who was at Livorno this season on loan from Parma, and it's one of those fascinating debates we had in France in the past, and that those players went through French clubs academies, could have chosen to play for France like Zidane or Nasri or Benzema, all those players, and probably because some of them were not good enough or because the call up from Algeria came before the one from France, decided to play for Algeria. But it's really interesting, I find it, that 8 out of those 11 were actually born in France, grew up in France, lived all their life in France, you know, and then went to play for some of them abroad. But it's quite an interesting sort of double culture there.
Mm.
But the Korean defending really was totally abysmal in that first half. Some of the third goal where Korea's two central defenders played as if tied together by a piece of invisible rope.
Mm.
They were both in the wrong place, and then they both ran to a different wrong place. And it was farcical.
Giancarlo Rinaldi tweeting Korean side, not really the same team since Byron Moreno retired. A little bit of bitterness.
The first Algeria goal, the Slimani one, is very similar to the Suarez one against England. The defending of South Korea tonight and the defending of England on the second Suarez goal is actually very similar. It's a long, long ball. And for England, obviously, Stevie Gerrard flicked it back to Suarez, and for this one, they just let it bounce, and then Slimani just pounced at the end of it. But So England and South Korea are actually quite similar defensively.
There you go. There's something, hey. So they could go through. Amy Lawrence says Capello's blunt Russian versus the free-scoring exhilarating Algerians to decide who joins Belgium in Group H. Tough one for the neutrals there. Indeed, it is Russia earlier still on Sunday in a 1-0 defeat against Belgium. Belgium, to be honest, weren't exactly great shakes in this either, were they? But a little flurry at the end was enough to secure the win.
Yeah, Eden Hazard made the difference there, like you expected him to do, but he was so disappointing through the whole game, like his team, to be fair. To their credit, they've played twice against very defensive team, Algeria and Russia, because Russia was just so boring tonight, I thought.
Well, everyone thought that Capello was going to bring in some creativity, Jagoev, or do something. But he seems to be the only figure who's remained immune to the charms of this Samba World Cup.
It was a very retro World Cup match, I thought, this afternoon. Like high temperatures, sweat-stained shirts after 15 minutes, players going down with cramp after 55. Lots of random aimless passing along the back. The old adage about international football being very slow-paced and relatively few overturns of possession, that's kind of how it played out. It played out like the kind of boring group game that we're used to seeing a lot of, but in this World Cup we haven't really seen at all.
Mm. It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction to this is. I mean, Russia are not out yet, and it could turn their way, but the probability looking at the group is that they're going to be going home before the knockout stages. I think the expectations were a little bit higher about this team, and Capello, who has already been booked to manage them right up until 2018, but Russian decision makers have been known to change managers for much less in the past.
Yeah, and it's all very familiar from for England fans who saw and went into the last World Cup in a state of perhaps irrational optimism and saw a string of extremely downbeat performances. And perhaps the Russians should have known what they were getting.
Mm, perhaps they should. All right, then.
Just if we could mention Thomas Vermaelen, because the poor guy spent his season at Arsenal either on the bench or injured, didn't play in the first game for Belgium, started this game at left-back, got injured after half an hour, came off.
He was injured in their warm-up, wasn't he? They showed the little clip during the match or at half-time.
And yeah.
He went over in the warm-up and that was it. And he seemed in a very bad way as he was limping off.
Mm. All right, so Belgium will be taking on Korea Republic in their final game and looking good, therefore, to top the group, which would see them take on whoever finishes second in Group G, currently USA, as we say. And we'll play a little bit of music and then we'll look at deciding games in Group A and B, which are already coming up on Monday. Woof.
Welcome Football Daily with James Richardson.
Well, the sun may have gone down, but it's not cooling down any here. Is that a moth? Wow. Group A, Simon.
Yes.
Oh, you got. I've got the table here. Here we go. Brazil and Mexico are both on 4 points. Croatia are on 3 points. Cameroon are on no points whatsoever. Now, if Brazil lose and the other two draw, that's Croatia and Mexico, in their match, Brazil would be out of the World Cup. But Brazil are probably not going to lose against Cameroon, are they? Cameroon, I think, are already out. Well, they're certainly already taking to headbutting each other and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's been the most shambolic of World Cup performances, probably.
Mm.
Eto's injured. He's got knee knack. They've been fighting. They've been arguing about.
Do you remember they almost didn't get there? They didn't want to get on the plane because they didn't get their money.
Well, win bonuses, ironically enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Once again, it's just that. I mean, every 4 years we've got one team. I mean, this. It's sometimes from Africa, but not always. But you always have one team. 4 years ago, it was us, the French. But you always have one team that does something completely crazy.
Mm. All right. They are the first team to lose 6 successive World Cup games since El Salvador in 1982. Well, there's a stat we've got to live without, but there you go. Anyway, so that's a game we don't anticipate Brazil having too many problems with. And thus, they're probably a good opportunity for Scolari to tweak his Seleção a little bit. There's a lot of unrest about the notion that Fred is the best they have to offer up front. But, you know, who knows what he'll come up with.
He has confirmed today that he's going to stick with the same team.
Stick with Fred?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so Hulk is coming back from Ramirez. So it's actually the same team as the bid.
That's the
Croatia game. Yeah.
Okay. It's the 16th anniversary of their last World Cup group game defeat.
Is it?
It is.
16 years?
Yeah.
They've not lost a group game. 1998,
when they lost to Norway.
Wow.
Yeah, that penalty.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 11 group stage matches between then and now.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's them taking on Cameroon. But the real action, I would posit, is in the match between Mexico, who are, as I mentioned, tied with Brazil on 4 points, and the team 1 point behind them, Croatia. Absolutely remarkable stuff from Mexico, given the way they came into this World Cup. To get an idea of the reaction to their progress so far and how exactly they turned things around, let's dial up our man in Guadalajara, Tom Marshall of ESPN's Mexican Soccer Show. Is there an atmosphere of tension over Guadalajara ahead of Monday's absolutely massive game?
Yeah, I mean, there really is. I mean, I think that Mexico coming into the World Cup, there weren't much expectations just because qualifying was just so dire. And I think that Miguel Herrera, the manager, to be fair, he's really turned it around and, you know, put out a team, a really gutsy team, and that Mexicans are really kind of proud of. So I think that, you know, there's nerves now that, you know, all this work that they've done to get where they are could, you know, go to waste against Croatia. I mean, this is a team that's got to the round of 16 in the last 5 World Cups. Mm. It would be a shame if they couldn't do it this time after playing so well.
Yeah, well, a point would be enough against Croatia. You mentioned that the fairly dismal qualifying record. I think there were games lost at the Azteca. There was the playoff with New Zealand. Everything seemed to point towards a very uninspiring World Cup campaign. So what exactly changed?
Yeah, I think at the time of the qualifying, I think there was a dressing room split between especially the Europe-based players and the domestic-based players. I think that they started badly and then confidence just completely went downhill after that. And to be fair, I think Miguel Herrera, the new manager, he's come in and he's started afresh with everybody. He's given everyone a fair chance, and he's imposed a system, a 5-3-2 system that's similar to the 2006 World Cup. And I think it really suits the Mexican players. He's and he's promised a team that's going to absolutely, like he says in the literal translation of Spanish, kill themselves on the pitch. He says this team is going to go out and give absolutely 100% every game that comes up. So I think I honestly think he has to take a lot of credit for the turnaround.
Hmm. You call him the new manager. He's the new manager, I think, in terms of the last year or so for Mexican football. No, he's the fourth in what, about 6 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's four in like 6 weeks.
Okay.
So, it's a complicated system. I think Sven Goran Eriksson, in his autobiography, he had a lot of interesting things about the way the Mexican Federation works. And I think that four managers in 6 weeks tells its own story on that level.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, amazing performance against Brazil, particularly from the goalkeeper who blew the rest of the world away, although Guillermo Ochoa is quite a big name anyway in Mexico, and in Ajaccio, of course. So Julien Laurent's here with us, and a big fan of Ochoa, no, Julien?
Yeah. He was probably one of the best keepers in France, despite Ajaccio being relegated, but he had a great season. He made the most saves in Liga this season, and I was not surprised to see him that good against Brazil.
Mm. There you go. Is he going to be able to pull out another performance like that out of the bag against Croatia? What's your feeling on this game, Tom?
I think it's going to be a really difficult game. I think that the midfield, obviously Croatia, you can make the argument, got one of the best midfields in the tournament, and Mexico really got to counter that. I don't think Mexico have come up against a striker like Mandzukic so far this tournament. So I think Rafa Márquez, Mata Rodriguez, Hector Moreno, big task for them to they've not given a goal away so far, but that's going to be just so vital. And I think it's going to be a really nervous game, to be honest. I think that both teams obviously know what's at stake. I think from both points of view, from Mexico and Croatia, they both feel so hard done by, especially Croatia, that first game against Brazil and the penalty. I think both of them feel so hard done by if they do go out, that I think just a lot of tension in the air, and at the end of the day, it could come down to a mistake, really.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, brilliant. Listen, enjoy the game, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for doing. Thanks for having me on.
Tom Marshall. He's lost his accent remarkably well. And it's going to be a huge game, this, against Croatia, who've had a busy World Cup themselves. That somewhat controversial defeat against Brazil, then the massive 4-0 victory over Cameroon, the nude bathing, which led to a press blackout. And, it's going to be a big game, this. What do you think, Julian?
Yeah, no, it's going to be great.
Going through, do you think?
I think Mexico, probably AJ. Yeah, I like the way they're playing. I like the 5-3-2 formation. I think that suits them perfectly. And despite the quality of Croatian midfield, especially Rakitic and Modric, I still can see Mexico going through.
These wide fellas, Perisic and Olic, is that the key thing for Croatia? Do Mexico have the personnel to deal with that?
Well, I think if Croatia play as well as they can play, then they should win that match and go through. And they've played pretty well in this World Cup, really. They should have got better out of that first game.
And, of course, they've got to get past Ochoa if he's in the kind of form that... How often does he come up with performances like that, do you think?
Very, very often. I mean, he did it in the league, in Liga in France last season, especially there's one game against PSG where he made, like, sort of 72 saves or something. They had, like, 19 shots on target, and he saved everything apart from one Cavani goal, but apart from that, he was outstanding.
Mm. All right.
Really impressive.
Who would you rather see? At the risk of alienating large swathes of global listeners, but who would you rather see?
Oh, Mexico every day.
Really? Why is that?
Yeah, because it brings some South American, Central America touch to that World Cup even more. And I think they've been brilliant going forward. I was disappointed by Croatia, even against Cameroon. Cameroon were so poor, and I don't think Croatia were that good anyway, despite the 4-0 win. And expecting more, especially from someone like Rakitic.
Okay, Sam?
I feel Croatia were hard done by in that first match, and that they deserve a bit of a recompense for that. And also, I'm a little bit worried that if Mexico go through, as well as Costa Rica and the USA, quite possibly, that FIFA will start giving all our qualifying, all UEFA's qualifying spots to North and Central America.
Yeah, the hex.
We wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, right. England will never play in the thing.
Indeed, and that would be terrible. Well, in Group B, meanwhile, Netherlands, very much of the old world, are already through, and so Chile. They're both on 6 points. Australia and Spain are both on nil points. And so you've got one very dead rubber as Australia face Spain, and one head-to-head for the group. Netherlands taking on Chile. It should be a stonker, this. No Robin van Persie, who's suspended. Great stat about this is the first time since how long?
1996.
That they've played without somebody called Van in the team.
Good stat.
Mm.
I see also, going back into ancient history, that they've only met, Holland and Chile have played once before, kind of, and that was in the 1928 Olympics in a kind of special tournament after the main Olympic football tournament, which is
really?
For a few losers. And so in the final, it was called the Consolation Final. Although Holland had lost in the first round of the Olympic tournament, Chile had lost in the preliminary round. So, I mean, they were a real loser in the main Olympics. But for some reason, this match has gone down as an official FIFA fixture. It was the Consolation Final, and it was a two-all draw between Holland, who are hosting, and Chile, and so they drew lots to decide who won. Holland won, but they wouldn't accept the cup. They gave the cup to Chile.
Oh,
that's
why?
Lovely.
Because it didn't feel right.
Oh, okay.
Perhaps. I don't know.
How come they were hosting this consolation cup thing then?
Well, they were hosting the whole Olympics.
Oh, the Olympics was there, was it?
Yeah.
That was going to be my next
question. I'm not quite sure why this consolation cup existed at all, and why it only had four teams in, and how they chose those four as opposed to any others.
Right, okay.
It looks like an excuse to give some Dutch footballers a pot that they eventually refused to accept anyway.
It's probably the only thing they've ever won anyway. Apart from the 88 Euros.
Netherlands, anyway, through to the knockout stages for the eighth consecutive World Cup. That's remarkable. Speaking of the number eight, that's how many goals Arjen Robben has scored in his last eight appearances for the Netherlands. Are they going to win this against Chile?
Chile have been brilliant this World Cup. They have a full-strength side.
I thought they were going to be missing some key personnel, including the fellow who scored the second goal against Spain.
Aranguiz, yeah, he's. I don't think he's going to play. He's suspended anyway.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, in which case, he's probably not.
Yeah.
But Van Persie's obviously out.
Yeah.
I mean, Chile could take them.
All right, some of that.
No, yep. a draw, and then Chile to beat Brazil in the last 16. That'd be special.
That would be remarkable, wouldn't it? Wow.
Yep. You know, it's half of the World Cup gone already.
Is that right?
32 games played. There's 32 to go, and it's half of it already.
Wow.
It seemed that it started last night or something.
Yeah, it's flown by, isn't it?
Really, probably because the games have been so good, but
yeah,
it's halfway through already.
And why have the games been so good, Julia?
Well, my theory, I know producer Pete, differs a little bit, and so do you, Jimbo, but I think defenses have been so poor.
Right.
Really, really, really poor.
So if you played the 2010 World Cup with these defenders, it would have been equally exciting, you think?
I think so.
Well, really?
I know there's been more shot, and there's probably more attacking flair and things like that. I think, for me, what has been shocking is the defending, really. And not just from England. Well, a lot from England, but also from the rest.
Right. Simon, what do you think?
I don't think it can be entirely put down to shocking defending. Teams can... if a team has a poor defence... So look at New Zealand in the last World Cup, for example. Their defence wasn't enormously strong, but they just defended as a unit of 11 and sterilised their games. And this World Cup, we haven't really seen a lot of that. So I think I put it down to some kind of collective intoxication.
In Brazil?
I've got to assume that FIFA are putting something in their drinks.
Ooh, maybe.
Yeah,
I didn't think about that. Yeah,
Well, I mean, it's fatuous, but there's something in the air down there, isn't there?
There certainly is. Hallucinations in Manaus, and maybe something that's just made everyone go a little bit giddy with World Cup fever. All right, we'll be getting another dose ourselves come Monday evening. Do join us for that. Meantime, many thanks to Simon Burton and Julien Laurent, and to guest producer Pete. See you, listeners. Have a super Monday.